Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Ed Matthews. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Mike. How are you? Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too. I will read your wonderful formal introduction.
Oh,
Ed is a seasoned real estate investor and a founder of the Clark Street Capital. With over a decade of experience, Ed built a portfolio of multifamily properties in Connecticut and Southeast United States. Ed's journey was far from direct. For 24 years, he worked for the Silicon Valley startups, honing his skills in the go-to tech world. And it wasn't until 2011, Ed bought his first rental property. So over the years, as Ed worked to grow the portfolio, juggling his family, day job, Clark Street, and finally 2018, he left the rat race and focused on the Clark Street business. So without further ado, let's get the show on the road.
Sounds good.
Ed, great to have you. And good when I was a guest on your podcast, we had an awesome conversation. So I'm sure this is going to be a lot of fun. So before we dive, tell us a little bit more about kind of your balance between your family and your business.
Yeah. So I'm always uncomfortable listening to people read my bio for some reason. But I think the short version is that I was a technology sales marketing operations executive with a handful of California-based companies. I live on the East Coast in Connecticut, and I was gone 150 nights a year. And so I had back in the day, I had two little girls who are now much larger. And, you know, it gave me a lot of incentive because I was missing, as my wife said, I was missing a lot of good stuff, right? I was missing choral concerts and soccer games and swim meets and all the fun stuff that you get to do when you're a dad. And I was missing a lot of it. And I loved the job. I loved the people that I worked with. But, you know, it comes down to, a decision about what's important. And in parallel, back in 2008, a very good friend of mine gave me a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I'm sure gets mentioned quite a bit, that, you know, fundamentally changed the way I looked at my future. And so it caused me to think about what the next 30 years looks like. And it fundamentally changed my path in that I realized that my future was working at, you know, as an entrepreneur and a business owner, not as an employee. And so I started buying. It actually took me a little while to get the courage to pull the trigger, but I finally bought my first property in 2011. And as a side hustle, before it was called a side hustle, I built a portfolio of rental properties and flipped, you know, I haven't counted, but I probably should, you know, well over 100 houses. And, you know, I used the capital from the flips to buy more multifamilies and rinse and repeat. I did it for about 6.5-7 years. And then I was with a company called DocuSign, and I was standing in a conference room full of probably 2,000 of my really talented colleagues. And I was listening to the CEO do what I affectionately refer to as his laser light show. Keith Kroc is one of the most amazing, charismatic human beings walking the face of the earth. And I was standing there and I was just like, Keith's right. He's right about everything he's saying, but I just can't do this anymore. And ultimately I resigned and, you know, to give you an idea of how much it meant to me to leave, I left 4 months before the company went public, which financially was a really stupid thing to do, but personally, best thing I ever did.
That's a great story. Honestly, you can't, you know, trade the quality of life for money. You can make all the money in the world, but if you can't be there for your family, what's the purpose?
You know, I was talking to somebody and it occurred to me, you only get 18 years, you only get 18 summers with the kids, right? And so, you know, I'm still a young man. I can go back to corporate America if I want, but in all candor, every once in a while, I'll get a call from a former colleague or a boss and they'll say, any chance? And I'm like, no. I'm done. I'm not coming back.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned 18 summers. I have a very good friend of mine. They have, he's a real estate guy, and he has also a coaching program. I think it's called 18 Summers.
Okay.
And it's what they do is basically, it's like a getaway. You take a kid, one kid, not two kids, not three kids, but they do these kind of getaways with other people like you, and just to enjoy a little bit of that one-on-one with a kid and to continue to build that relationship. So, yeah, you get only 18 summers and then the kid's out of the house and then it looks bizarre a little bit.
So I've got my oldest is about to graduate from college in December, and my youngest is going to graduate from high school in the spring. So we're close.
Well, enjoy while you can, and then the journey will have the next chapter. So
absolutely.
Now let's talk about the real estate. This show is all about sort of obviously individual life journey, but also how they use real estate to help them achieve their, you know, freedom, financial goals, whatever it is. So we're doing this recording middle of September 25. The Fed just cut rates. Things are looking a little better. We've had a couple of rough years in multifamily space, commercial real estate in general. So I don't know if it's too little, too late for some projects, but definitely it's, you know, it's tailwind. So what are you working on now? What kind of opportunities are you seeing? What's interesting today? What do you think is going to be your next move for the rest of this year into 2026? Just kind of open discussion. You're looking for new properties.
We make offers every week. They don't get accepted, but you know, because we're basically, you know, we have a model. We stick to that model. It is, you know, and it's pretty basic stuff, right? But the bottom line, step one is I need a 2-point spread between the cap rate and our cost of debt, or we can't talk, right? And so, you know, we make offers. So, you know, over the last probably 2 years, because of my background, both in multifamily and in single family, I tend to take what the market gives. And so lately, it has been single family flipping that I've focused on. You know, quite frankly, I haven't bought a multifamily in 16, 17 months. And I'm starting to see some movement. I'm starting to see more rational pricing. I'm not one of those people that blames the cost of debt and the Fed for the situation here, because historically, if you look back the last 50 years, we're right smack in the middle of historical norms as far as mortgage rates, you know, for commercial buildings and so on. And so that's not the part that concerns me. You know, what I'm focused on when I'm trying to bid on these is one is cost of insurance, which is still very high. And then the other is the, you know, the going in price, because it's getting better, but it's not where it needs to be in terms of sellers being realistic. And so what I'm working on right now is a handful of single family home flips. And we bought about a year ago, we bought 58 acres here in Connecticut. And we are in the final stages of approval for a solar farm that we're going to deploy, as well as we're going to get, I believe, eight lots approved, residential lots approved. And we are deciding probably in the next 6 to 8 weeks if we're going to build or if we're going to sell off those lots, but we're definitely keeping the solar farm.
That's really cool.
It's a really interesting project.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more, but in the world of AI, listening to a lot of the AI podcasts and all the conversations, it's all about energy. Almost like you can't associate AI progress without building more energy capacity. So solar is the fastest way to get to production because all other methodology, nuclear or
takes too long.
Gas turbines, all of them take a very long time to deploy. I mean, talking about you either can buy turbines or you can't, you know, nuclear is a 10-year project even with improved technology. So solar, it's still the fastest path to production.
Far. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the by 2040, I think the year, we will, AI alone will consume all of the current grid's electrical load. So if we don't improve in the next, you know, 15 plus years, we are in a major world of hurt. So I think there are probably three competing. I watched a podcast, and this gentleman who runs a new technology fission nuclear company, a generation company. And the idea is that it's much smaller and modular. So instead of the reactors that you traditionally see with the two stacks plus, now they're roughly the size of a shipping container. And you can daisy chain them and stack them as needed. And so that is really interesting to me because you can get it up and running in about 3 years. And you know, the output clearly is not what a traditional nuclear plant will provide, but it is encouraging that, you know, we're on the right path. And then hopefully, I think we have 94, 95 nuclear facilities in the country that are online. And hopefully that increases because we certainly are going to need it. And solar, while a viable option in the short and medium term, it doesn't solve the problem that we're going to have, you know, in a couple of decades.
Well, it's a fast path. Solar is a fast path to deploy. It may not be. I don't know how scalable it is, but it's in, you know, in Northeast, the amount of sun that we get is also a little bit, you know, limited relative to, you know, Arizona or Nevada or other parts of the southern regions. But still, it's a good way to probably get a good return on your investment. So let's continue the conversation. The back to the bidding on multifamily. First of all, what you said, 2% positive spread is sort of the key requirement for us too. It's almost like it's the equity spread, the cap rate to the interest rate. It's not easy to get, but that's philosophically is the right way to think. And I mean, I can just tell you where you can actually get to these type of situations is you just got to find a distressed, truly distressed owner, even to the point where maybe the bank might need to be, you know, might need to take a haircut. So these type of situations exist. Either there's no equity left or even the deal is upside down. And it is sort of a, not easy to find, but they do get fun. You know, these things exist. It's almost like you just got to continue. You got to be persistent and you don't want to buy a really troubled asset where you have to spend a ton of money bringing it up into, let's just call it operation or significant improvement. But even these, and let's just call them not super, super difficult lifts, we're finding, but it's not a volume play. So keep looking. I'm sure you're going to find. We're definitely finding in the industrial space and open air shopping, those two strategies, not that difficult to get. Yep. Multifamily still, unfortunately, you know, some sellers just feel that they don't have to surrender the asset. So they keep holding on to this while they're bleeding cash until they no longer can.
Right.
And that's when the pressure gets to the point where once it goes past the point where equity is depleted, it's really all discussion with the bank.
Right.
And then, you know, that's the theory. So
I
would expect that over time, even with interest rate cuts, because the higher for longer has been around so long, a lot of these projects have got to the point where they just out of money.
Yes.
So because they're out of money, the maintenance suffers, right? You don't have the money to spend on maintenance. And then two, you don't have enough money to keep the mortgage.
Right.
So it's basically, before there was a pure pressure on the owners, now it's the pressure on the bank.
Yeah.
And if you get enough of these pressure points with the banks, they will start, some of them will start getting some flexibility.
Yeah, especially the more regional portfolio lenders, right? Yeah, I mean, I fully expect that to happen. But, you know, it's interesting. Moody's had an announcement, a presentation, I think they made, I want to say in January of 24, saying that basically the message was that 23% of the mortgages that were about to be repriced were underwater. And, you know, it's interesting. I expected there to be a lot more distress in the market, and it turns out that a lot of those guys just found bridge loans and or sold. And so the distress that I was expecting, I didn't see. I am seeing some distress here in the Northeast, although this market is pretty healthy. You know, I think we're also saved. I mean, you're here too.
Lower cap rates. There's another issue in Northeast, you're not going to find that 2% spread. It's very hard to find here. It's
correct.
Way harder to find that 2% requirement here versus some other markets.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. And that's where we live right now. I'm not buying in the Carolinas at the moment. Just because of life circumstances, I'm busy and I don't want to travel, so I'm not looking down there right now. But what I was driving at is that the fact is that rents here, and especially in Connecticut, continue to rise very consistently and pretty aggressively. So, and you know, the job market here in the state is very good, and so not only does rent continue to climb fast ahead of inflation, but so do incomes. So it's so far so good.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Statistically, the bigger distress is not Northeast. Northeast, you've had a very healthy rent growth because of very healthy overall economy.
Yeah.
And you got to go more of the markets where you've seen oversupply, you've seen some level of softness. And it's got to be enough motivation for the owners to transact. But
yeah,
overall,
Texas, Arizona, there's probably pressure there. But
yeah, you know, you got Texas, you got Arizona, you got Florida, you got plenty of other markets where, you know, Georgia, these properties were bought at the peak. And it's just a matter of time. I just want to say that multifamily heavily been financed on floating rate debt, right? I mean, they just, as rates spiked, the pressure just kind of spiked unless you had a rate cap. And when the rate cap expired, that's when the pressure really applied. And yeah, extend and pretend and mass debt, bridge loans, all these strategies continue to be ways to survive and drag it out. But it's still this. I think the data is misleading. What I would say is the pressure in the system, the non-reported pressure, is greater than the actually formally reported pressure.
Agree.
The banks
I
will
agree.
Play games to make it look like they don't have a loan, you know, in default when it should be in default. So maybe it's a problem with regulators, whatever the incentives. So what we are seeing is sooner or later, these deals situations will come to the market. On top of all this, Northeast has a really big problem. And it's just the entire country has a big problem. Even non-floating rate debt, the fixed rate stabilized asset, is the maturities cliff. It's to the point where you finance, let's use an example, at 4.3% rate, and you took a five-year loan, and that loan is really maturing now. So today, it would be, let's call it 6.3. you just can't refinance. That difference is just so big.
It's huge.
So I don't know what the solution is, but the solution is
sell quickly to me put it on. At a discount. That would be wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm ready to go.
Cool. Well, let's continue the conversation. So sure. Obviously you're doing solar, you may sell some development lots. Yeah. And what else? What else happening? Just curious.
So that development land actually, it originally started off as a multifamily affordable housing, but you know, construction costs are what they are. And so we thought that highest and best use was the solar and the residential. I'm also looking at a lot of flex industrial. A friend of mine, Brian Tully, he up in Massachusetts, he and his brother have invested very successfully in that. And you know, here in the Northeast, that asset class performs exceptionally well, given that you know, it's a healthy economy. So the contractors are doing well. The other small and medium-sized businesses that use those types of, you know, with a garage and an office and or a warehouse and an office, they're thriving. So that is an asset class I'm interested in. We're actually stress testing one right now as we speak. It's sitting on my desk right here. And I'm playing red team, where I'm trying to shoot as many holes in the deal as humanly possible. And I found a few, but I think they're solvable problems. So we'll see.
Well, that's really interesting. So, yeah, we've actually made a very similar conclusion to do a lot more in the industrial, and this two primary. Well, there's multiple flavors of it.
Yep.
But flex industrial is one where we've played, and the other flavor we've seen, just to reflect on the industrial, is an absolute triple net single tenant.
Yes.
So a little that's different.
About on our show. Yep.
Yeah. It's a little different. But we find that if the one tenant, it's your one risk point, but if it's a high credit quality tenant with a probability of default being very, very low, right? I mean, risk is composed of two elements, likelihood and impact, right? The impact is very heavy if the tenant leaves, but if you got a great location, you could still re-tenant it, especially when demand is healthy.
Yep.
And then the likelihood is very low. I mean, it's not zero, but it's sub, you know, 1%. So if you combine all that together, flex industrial, I guess it's somewhat similar to multifamily, especially if you have a lot of them. But it's, you know, if you have a 10 garage or 20 garage or 30, I've heard, and I'm not sure what projects you're looking at, you take 100,000 square feet and you have 30 tenants at 3,000 square feet each or something like that, right?
Yep.
So with 30 tenants, I'm just, what are you looking at? Is this kind of
stuff? We're looking at a unit right now. It's 46 units. And well, there's the opportunity for 46 units. I think there are 24 on site with land and our existing approvals to put another 22, I think, on the property. So that's very interesting, especially given that building those is a relatively straightforward process. You know, nowhere near as complex as, say, building a in an apartment building. And so it's really, you know, it's really attractive, because while the leases are probably not as lengthy, you know, it's probably a 3 to 5 year lease as opposed to, you know, what industrial signs, you know, what are they, 20, 30 year plus, right?
20, 25 years
with an option to renew. Right. So it's a, you know, it's not the same. I look at flex as more akin to hybrid self-storage than I do multifamily, although there's a lot of commonality in terms of how they're run and managed, probably, you know, in terms of the multi-side. But I think the returns are a lot closer to what traditionally self-storage has provided.
So on this topic, self-storage is monthly rents, multifamily is annual rents, industrial and like retail, yep, typically longer term rents. So flex industrial maybe somewhere in between with
3 to 5.
Yeah. And what kind of, you know, cap rates, I guess acquisition cap rates, if you didn't you know, I don't know if it's a critical part of the strategy to build additional, maybe that's the required value to make it very attractive. But if you don't build, well, let's call it this way. What are you buying it at on a cap rate on the as is, and what it'll cost you to build, what kind of cap rate or yield to cost on the extension?
Cap rate going in is in the nines. And to build, TBD. I'm working on that right now.
Yeah, that's actually, that's great. So nine or above in the nines.
9.2 or something like that.
Yeah. It's a, I've seen single tenant industrials, 8 to 9% range. Maybe, maybe you wind up in the nine with the flex, but the bottom line is you can actually get the 2% spread.
Absolutely. More.
More, yeah. You could get the money in the sixes, right?
Yeah, I think our cost of capital is in the mid-ish sixes, and you know, if we're going in at 9.2 and change, even if we're wrong by a half a percentage point, we're still very good.
Yeah, this reminds me. We just did open air shopping, 9.25 cap on purchase, 6.5 fixed debt. Right? I mean, that's a 275 spread. If you don't wind up to 75, you wind up with 2.25 or something like this.
If I'm wrong about everything, it's still north of 2, so we're good. So
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a mix of the tenants. But if they are, if you have to have a diversified mix, and it's a great location, I assume it's northeast, right? That the project
up in the Boston area, yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. So have you run this by your investors? I'm just curious. This is one of the things we are looking to do in very, very near future because we're working on these industrial deals. We literally want to do a query, a questionnaire, a survey to investors and say, okay, here's the deal. Here's what they look like. Here's the cash flow economics. Here are the IRR economics. Here is the downside protection. Here's the safety.
Right.
Is this interesting or not? To me, it's interesting, but it's kind of for capital raising purposes, it's harder to raise. So you want to make sure you lock up the thing on the contract. You still can raise capital for it.
Yeah, I mean we have probably a handful of key investors who are the lion's share of our capital partners, and I've had conversations with all of them to see if this is something that would be of interest. And, you know, some have said no, but a lot of them said yes. And, they gave me some pretty specific needs in terms of their returns and timeframes and things like that, but nothing that would scare me off in terms of really spending some time on this. So that's what I've been doing like the last couple of weeks, as a matter of fact.
Curious, what are flex industrial you're seeing? What are the pencil at if you buy it in the nines? Just curious, what's the cash flow to LPs? And then what's the IRR target under whatever terms?
Yeah, so I'm guesstimating on a little bit of this because we're literally mid due diligence right now. But, the way we'll set it up is probably an 8% pref with a target of 15% IRR, but I think we'll do better than that.
Yeah, this is so similar to what we were looking in the single tenant industrial. It's very, very similar concept. IRR target is like 14 to 16. So 15 smack in that range.
Yep.
They behave very, very similarly. You just have a different mix of flex versus single tenant.
Yeah.
And I assume you still have rent escalation clauses. You still have all the fun stuff. But, yeah.
Well, I mean, so there's the existing rents. I think 22 of the 24 are rented out. We're doing our due diligence on the leases, but nothing has jumped out at us that causes us concern. There's, standard escalator clauses with at least the leases that I've seen. I haven't reviewed them all yet, but. So far, so good.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear. And honestly, I've had discussion, interestingly enough, with a number of investors, and many people are accustomed. They're thinking today you have to get, buy super deep and get your returns in the very high teens and in the 20s. And we absolutely trying to look for this. But when you go into the strategy, it's not always the case. But you have to be open-minded and at least from a lot of conversations we've had, just the rule number one, don't lose money. So if you go with that rule, don't lose money, then immediately you start thinking, how do you, what kind of deals can protect you against, you know, capital, potential capital risk? And industrial looks super, super downside protected.
It does. And you know, the economy is going the right way. Manufacturing trends are going the right way. Here in the Northeast, the contractor class is thriving. And that is probably 60% of the clientele, maybe a little bit less, but that's probably where it lies. And, you know, the others are, different types of businesses, retail and other. And, it's very interesting. Still dealing with human beings, so it's not quite self-storage in that, you know, you don't have to talk to a human if you don't want to, but I'm a people person anyway, so that doesn't matter. And, so there's relationships there that have to be managed and maintained and, you know, evolved, but, you know, by and large, so far, you're catching me mid due diligence, but so far it's pretty darn attractive.
Yeah, good luck. And it's Thanks. Way easier to manage. What reminds me, you know, multifamily, and I have a lot of respect and admiration for that asset class, but it's way, way, way harder to execute your strategies. You have tenants, you have, you know, rent regulations, depending on the market.
Indeed.
You have insurance, you have the hurricanes, you have oversupply, depending on where you are, of course. But these industrial tenants, typically you sign 3-5 year lease, and most of the times you're managing asset, not a property.
Right. Which is very coming off of managing my own multifamilies for all these years. This is very attractive to me.
Very cool. Yeah. Great minds think alike. How would folks reach out? Any great books, suggestions, anything like, books?
I'm reading Keith Cunningham's, I'm blanking on the name. Excuse me one second. Let me look. The Road Less Stupid. I just started it. And so far I've met Keith and I've seen him speak multiple times, and this has been on my reading list for probably a year and a half. So I'm finally getting to it. If you want to get in touch with me, you are more than welcome to text or email me at ed@clarkst.com. That's clarkst.com. And, if I can be of service, we're at the same web address. And if you're interested in what we're working on, we also have our own podcast, Real Estate Underground. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Ed. Yeah. The podcast is great and you're a great host and we've had an awesome conversation. So
we did. You were great. Thank you.
I really appreciate kind of how like great minds think alike. And it's, I don't know what it is. We could be wrong, but at least we are learning and we're trying to be right. And sometimes when many people come to the same similar conclusions through their trials in life, one way or the other, there's some wisdom in that.
I hope so. We'll find out, won't we? Yeah. So far, so good, Mike.
Thank you, Ed. It's been a pleasure. And ed@clarkstreet.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.